DW Africa Link.
Over 30 African countries currently criminalize same-sex relations. Burkina Faso has now added its name to that growing list. As of early September 2025, the Transitional Legislative Assembly adopted a revised family code that criminalizes consensual same-sex relations between adults, imposing prison terms of 2 to 5 years along with substantial fines and even deportation for foreigners. This is a significant departure for a nation that until now had never outlawed homosexuality. This is a topic of utmost importance. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from and on Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The modern LGBTQ plus rights movement gained global momentum in the mid-20th century, yet Africa has largely taken a different path. While countries like South Africa and Botswana have embraced legal protections, most of the continent continues to uphold or expand colonial-era bans, often reinforced by religion and tradition. These cultural factors play a significant role in shaping societal attitudes towards LGBTQ plus rights, often leading to discrimination and violence. Human rights advocates warn these laws deepen stigma and violence, undermining commitments to equality. Burkina Faso's new law highlights this divide, choosing restriction over inclusion in a growing continental trend. Now, joining me for this conversation is Larissa Kuju, a Human Rights Watch researcher, as well as Angel Maxine, an activist, musician, and a personality with the LGBT community who currently lives in Berlin but is originally from Ghana. I'll start with you, Larissa. Just hearing this news, what was your reaction to Burkina Faso's new law criminalizing same-sex relations?
You know, I'm always disappointed with leaders who claim to defend African sovereignty, African values, people that are vulnerable, people that have their share in the global economy, taking decision like this. It's always, always a disappointment, a huge one, because you cannot claim Pan-African value and you divide your citizen between people who deserve and people who doesn't deserve. It doesn't make sense. We are all entitled to live in security, to live without fear, and the state is there. Their mandate is to protect everybody, regardless of whatever. So it's always a disappointment. It was not a surprise because I've been following up what has been happening in Burkina Faso for the last 2 or 3 years. I think there's also a little bit of hope because on the contrary, with countries like Ghana or Uganda, their laws are very harsh towards LGBT community. This law sounds a bit broad, so it seems like the advocacy efforts that people have put in place have more or less given some fruit.
But the new law, though, imposes prison terms, Larissa, and hefty fines, obviously sparking outrage from even what you're saying. How would you differentiate this law from Burkina Faso with the laws from countries like Ghana, Zimbabwe, and some of the countries that are already on the list, and obviously the impact it has on the citizens?
The law is broad because it says everybody that has that engage in activities that could promote homosexuality. It's not been said per se that if a man has sex with another man or a woman has a sex with another woman, this is it. It said engaging in activities that could be seen as promoting homosexuality. I know it's vague, but it could have also been worse. It could have also been literally saying this. And if they're saying it that way, It means, of course, they are it's a homophobic policies, but also it leaves some place for negotiation, to see, no, this is not promoting homosexuality. This is, for example, promoting human rights. This is promoting right to private life. This is promoting security for some people.
You're right. Now, Angel, coming to you, I mean, Ghana is one of those countries that passed that law, that no to LGBTQ community. You are an activist, a musician, artist, and also a personality with the LGBT community. What was the immediate impact of Ghana's anti-LGBTQ plus law on your own community?
Thank you so much. I'll say the immediate impact was fear and panic. Yes, that is the first thing that I can actually remember because I also felt the same way. And people went into hiding, safe spaces were shut down, many people lost their houses, their job. Like every support you have overnight was just taken away from us, just like that. And I'll say the law also didn't just criminalize our identities. It created an atmosphere where people can just harm you. Somebody can accuse you. Somebody can harass you. It created that kind of atmosphere for people to feel that, oh yes, it's okay for any if we know somebody who identifies as a queer person, or if we think somebody is a queer person. It's okay to harass them because the government is already, in support of it. Families were disowning their own children, like even basic access to healthcare became a problem because now people are scared that when they go to the hospitals, the doctors will report them or the nurses will go and say it. And, in Africa, we have very curious nurses and doctors who, we still have homophobic people in the healthcare system also. So it was very hard for us to, especially healthcare. And I'll say this wasn't just a law, it's something that is made to just erase us.
Right. But before we even get to the bill, Angel, let's talk about your own family, your own people themselves. You know, they say charity begins at home. What was their reaction when you came out to say, this is who I am?
Oh, so I'll say that it was very hard for me, and especially with my father and my other siblings, it was quite hard. With my mother, I've always kept her close to me, and educated her, made her understand, try to add her to community events, programs, take her to workshops because at that point I needed somebody to stand for me who really understand me. And I found my mother very condescending at that time. Even though she is also a reverend, she likes to pray. At first, she thought being a gay person was a sinner and all these things. It was, until that I really came out and she realized that, yes, this is who I really am, and she really gave me all her support. And it was by my father, he is like supports my activism but cannot support my gender identity, and it doesn't work like that. And I'll say my immediate family, some people just think that I'm having some mental illness. Some people think that, oh, it's a phase in their life, so in her life, so it will pass. It's been very difficult, but I think they've seen me, and I've also really tried to just stay away, just be me, just do my thing and focus on myself. So it wasn't very easy for me with the family issue. It was very, very tough. But now I've just decided to just be me, and if you understand, fine. If you don't, it's just be there.
Now, before I turn back to Larissa, just still with you, Angel, how would you compare the way Ghana communicated the fact that they didn't accept these communities in their country? Was it also vague and broad in the beginning, like what Burkina Faso has done, or it was just straight up to say no to this in Ghana?
The way it started in Ghana, It started by with the community space being shut down, and all this brouhaha of the media taking wrong information out, people being attacked, and all that. And in Ghana, it looks like it's a political tactics that they are using. But if you look at Burkina Faso, I just see that as homophobic. Like, it's just people who are just like somebody who is just a homophobic person. It's not a political stance. It's not anything to win political power or favor or anything. It's just being homophobic. And these are just the two differences that I can just see in these two. Ghana went through it in a different route. Burkina Faso just came straight to direct to say, we are homophobic. And it's not because of any political power or anything. They are just homophobic. And how the
Right.
Ghanaian one went, yes.
Right. Now, Larissa, if you can just add something onto that, is there any difference if someone goes directly to say no to this in Burkina Faso, someone that just goes like, diplomatically to say this is not what we accept and things like that, just from what Angela said between Burkina Faso and Ghana?
Yes, I totally agree with what Angel said. This is a homophobic stance, and things didn't happen the same way like in Ghana. And because Ghana is kind of an example of in a democratic life of a country, but in the case of Burkina Faso, it's a junta that came into power after a military coup. So what they are doing under African values, it's just to, it's to, they have a popular support. What they want is to galvanize a bit more support from their people, from the populations, to be seen as a political power that is resisting foreign influence. Yes, definitely, that is a homophobic stance. And in the case of Ghana, we can see the grip of US far right movement, evangelical group, and stuff. It's not the same thing in Burkina Faso. I think even more that if we look closely into what has happened in Burkina Faso, we can see that maybe some individuals have taken advantage their closeness with the power to bring that into the law, not because it's based on human rights and stuff like that, but mostly because in the HIV sector there are a lot of organizations that are working with LGBT people, and those organizations have gained a big power in the country. And also that these last 10, 15 years LGBT organizations have grown. They are now able to do the work themselves and even to manage the global funding that are coming. But you have organizations that are used to have that much money and to subcontract to LGBT organization. I think the problem might also, we should also look at that. Organizations or leaders who are not willing to share all the power and what they have gained through that sector to other actors. That's why they are saying attitude that could be seen as promoting homosexuality. I think the framing here is important. It's like they are putting aside all organizations that are working, and those organizations, of course, if you want to do work with LGBT, it's mostly under the HIV/AIDS umbrella. Most organizations operate under that. It's a way of putting them aside, silence them, and even pushing them, like delete, erase what they have been doing to keep managing all the flow. And it's not that much flow of money, of course, with Trump in power. But I think we should also look at it, at it on that way, not necessarily foreign actors that have been, putting money in the country to do stuff, but internal disagreement, internal fights that brought it into light that way.
And I can't just resist in the background, Larissa. I'm sure you're nursing a musician there in the house. As you're speaking, your voice is also rhyming with what you're saying. Is that your daughter or your son? I don't know. What a voice.
It's my daughter.
Right. Yeah, now still with you, Larissa, just to also find out the broader human rights implications of this trend, especially across West Africa.
I mean, we've seen freedom of expression and association that are being really, how do I say, a crackdown on that. Privacy and non-discrimination, these are the human rights violations that we can already notice. And as Angel said, it increases risks of arbitrary arrest, extortion, violence, all kind of stuff. And then we can, I mean, the situation was already tense. Now it's even more fear, panic, people locking themselves into their homes, people fleeing the country. It's time for global solidarity again, among activists, among human rights organizations, and also with social media and the fact that the junta is putting a lot of effort into polishing the image of what they are doing in the country. It would not calm down so soon because authoritarian leaders or people who want popular support, they know that if you want support, you should condemn homosexual. That's the easiest way, and they are the easiest target. If you want support, popular support, just do that, and people will applaud you, and they will say, "Okay, you're a great leader. This government is doing good." But they are distracting people from real issues like insecurity. Burkina Faso is facing a huge security issue. And also economic crisis. The junta has been there for 2 years with a lot of promises, with a lot of we will do this, we'll do that, we do this, and a lot of discourses. But in reality, people in Burkina Faso, they are not benefiting what is being said on TV.
Now, to you, Angel, just to find out when this happened in Ghana, how some activists and allies responded both locally and internationally, speaking of how the global community actually intervenes in such laws or whatever a country decides to do.
Locally, we become more discreet, but also more resilient. And activists are creating underground support systems, providing safe housing, and keeping people connected, through community care. We still have some organizations there that are still trying to keep the community going, to give support, especially healthcare system. And as Larissa said, most of this right on the HIV/AIDS prevention and care methods, to be able to continue to run the community. And people are being given safe spaces at least for some time to be able to sort them out. We're able to rent places for people. So I think that the care is going on, and also internationally, allies have also raised awareness, push governments, NGOs, institutions also speak out. So I think the solidarity is powerful. Yes, we feel that we are not alone, and it also shows us how much work remains, because this is not about statements alone.
Right. Larissa, just on the same point as well, just to find out how international bodies are responding even to this announcement, and if there's any pressure that can be applied to reverse this or such laws.
It's always a dilemma to the international community when anti-rights legislation like this one emerge, especially in country that are managing the power the way they do. You know that Burkina Faso is partner of Alliance des États du Sahel with Mali and Niger, so it also sends a signal that we are on our own and we do things the way we want. But the response should be balanced. The same way I think we can pressure government not to enhance the law. The same way we should also the international community should also be conscious of the social context and the neo-colonial perception that can come with that. It doesn't mean they shouldn't do something. They should. They can use diplomatic responses. They can use strategic pressure. In Uganda, in my knowledge, actually, there's no one being in prison for being homosexual, for engaging in same-sex activities now. But the law was passed 2 years ago. I think if the situation is like this, it's because of some strategic pressure that not only international partners have done, but also organization on the national level. And also for me, they should center the communities that are affected first. They should think of them first, not about the junta, those elites, but they should think of the communities, those individuals that are affected. It means some funding adjustment. It means some emergency procedure to put people in a safe place, things like that. They should center the communities that are affected first. And then alongside, they can use their diplomatic ways and strategic pressure to. I'm not seeing this law being overturned soon. That would be a big surprise, but I can see it not being enacted.
Right. Now, Angel, just as we wrap up our discussion, if you can maybe give a few lessons that can be drawn from Ghana's experience that might also help activists in Burkina Faso.
One lesson is we shouldn't wait for the laws to be passed before we start mobilizing ourselves. We should be aware of the situation we find ourselves in. We should also understand the situations that is going on in other African countries that have passed the bill and, begin to think of what we can do in case this bill is passed. How can we organize, and also how can we build our network? Another thing I'll also say is that we should center on community care, because when laws like this comes, it brings us into isolation. We people want to hide, people are afraid, somebody is scared to communicate or connect to somebody because they feel they could be betrayed. So we should really center our community care so that in case anything of this happens, we community members can know where to go to, the people they can reach out to, the support that they can also accept and receive as also community members as well.
Right. Thank you so much, Angel Maxine. And Larry, so just in a minute or so, advice you can give to African countries in terms of human rights, looking at this topic we are tackling today.
My message is simple. Pan-Africanism is about love of Africans, regardless of who they are. It's about unity, it's about Ubuntu, so there's no need. All these divisions, it just brings fear, inequalities, it just brings pain to families, not just to individuals. So instead of dividing people like this, we should just work towards a more united front. And there is nothing un-African about being a homosexual. There are people there who have never traveled all their lives, but they are there. So gay people exist, and gay people deserve the same treatment with dignity, love, care as anyone else. That's my message.
Thank you so much, Larissa. Could you and Angel Maxine for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast? Larissa, could you, a Human Rights Watch researcher, as well as Angel Maxine, activist and musician, many thanks for joining us. Now, as Burkina Faso joins this widening crackdown, the question remains whether Africa will move toward greater inclusion or deeper entrenchment of exclusion. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but an integral part of our community, and your engagement can significantly shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, Made for Minds.